Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, let's do it again. It's time to learn and improve our American English skills. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today we bring you political news from Hong Kong. Many people there are hoping for democratic elections, but China says it has the right to say who can run for office. We'll have details. Then, news from the United States. Recently, our highest court heard arguments about the rights of gay and lesbian people to marry. While many states already allow this, the Supreme Court is being asked to make it a right for all Americans, no matter where they live. There you have it, a chance to find out about important events presented at a slower speed for English learners from VOA. Let's get started with part one. Political tensions continue to rise in Hong Kong. Pro-democracy legislators are promising to block China's plan for electoral reform in the territory. The plan calls for electing a city leader from a list of candidates approved by the central government in Beijing. Democracy activists say they will travel throughout Hong Kong over the next several weeks. They want to convince people to support the direct election of Hong Kong's chief executive. Last year, pro-democracy activists shut down parts of the city for months. Earlier this year, Hong Kong's government released a plan for election reform that is almost exactly the same as one proposed by China. It lets people vote for the city's leader, but they can only choose from a list of candidates chosen by a committee loyal to the Chinese central government. Emily Lau is the head of Hong Kong's Democracy Party. She says she and other pro-democracy lawmakers will not permit the plan to be approved.
I think the proposal by the Hong Kong government is not good enough. It does not meet the very basic demands of a genuine democratic elections. So we are going to vote against it. I think many of the pro-democracy members in the Legislative Council are going to vote against it.
After Hong Kong's government released its plan, pro-democracy legislators left the city's parliament building. Most of them wore black shirts with a yellow cross on the front to protest the government's election plans. Two-thirds of the city's legislators must vote for the plan if it is to become law. For that to happen, China and the Hong Kong government would have to convince at least four of the pro-democracy legislators to support the plan. Hong Kong's chief executive, C.Y. Leung, recently spoke to reporters. He warned the city's voters that if their legislators do not support Hong Kong's election plan, it might be a few years before a new plan can become law. But many Hong Kong citizens, especially young people, say if the government's plan becomes law, it would weaken the pro-democracy movement. Pa Sha is a protester.
Well, I think that the best scenario is that it will be vetoed to show that the people of Hong Kong will not be cheated by this fake proposal, fake reform.
The pro-democracy movement has broken up into different groups since hundreds of thousands of demonstrators gathered in Hong Kong last year. Many supporters have left the Federation of Students, which was one of the main organizers of the demonstrations. They disagree with the direction of the movement. Some students say they want to take stronger action. They have protested near Hong Kong's border with mainland China by shouting at and threatening Chinese travelers and shoppers visiting Hong Kong. Although the students and other protesters disagree about methods, The movement appears to have support among people who live in Hong Kong. A recent study of public opinion found that fewer than half of the city's residents support the government's plan. It was least popular among Hong Kong's well-educated young people. The study found 55% of those who have at least a college education oppose the plan. 63% of those between the ages of 18 and 29 oppose it. No large protests have been announced, but demonstrations could begin again if pro-democracy legislators switch their vote and the plan becomes law. Recently, 8 people were arrested during a small pro-democracy protest in the Hong Kong neighborhood of Mong Kok. Television reports showed police using pepper spray and sticks against a crowd of protesters who were trying to block traffic. You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments last month on whether gays and lesbians have the constitutional right to marry. Depending on how the court votes, it could lead to legalization of same-sex marriage across the U.S. Or the court could leave things the way they are. Now each state has the right to decide whether to allow same-sex marriage. Ann Ball explains the situation.
Gays and lesbians can now legally marry in at least 36 states and Washington, D.C. Justice Anthony Kennedy is one of the 9 justices on the nation's highest court. He wrote the court's 3 previous gay rights decisions. All eyes and ears were on Justice Kennedy to see if he would show which way he was leaning on the issue. But he did not tip his hand. 2 years ago, in another case called United States versus Windsor, the country's highest court threw out the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. It said the law was unconstitutional and no longer valid. That meant that the federal government now recognizes same-sex marriages for the purpose of federal benefits, such as tax and inheritance laws. During the arguments, the justices indicated where they might stand on the issue of whether states can continue to define marriage as a union of a man and a woman, or whether the Constitution provides same-sex couples the right to marry. 4 states, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee, brought the cases before the court. A federal appeals court in Ohio upheld the state's bans against same-sex marriage last November. Lawyers for the 4 states argued in a paper given to the Supreme Court that this case is not about the best marriage definition. Lawyer John Bursch wrote, "Who decides, the people of each state or the federal courts?" Lawyers for same-sex marriage argue that it comes down to fairness. They also point to the 1967 case of Loving versus Virginia, in which the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the state bans on interracial marriage. The justices said then that those bans violated the constitutional rights of interracial couples. In general, the conservative justices showed their support for the states, and the court's liberal justices indicated their support of gays and lesbians to marry across America. Legal scholars expect the case to end up in a close 5-4 ruling. Some believe the Supreme Court already has shown how it might decide. "I think the writing is on the wall," said Nan Hunter, a Georgetown University law professor. "I think almost everyone believes that it is just a matter of time before gay couples can marry anywhere in the United States." The court is expected to decide later this summer how it will rule on the case.
Thanks to Ann Ball for that report. And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the second part of our education report on learning to read in Sofala helps Ghanaian kids learn English. It was not long before the Sofala community asked to enlarge the adult program to include children. Ari Sherris is a professor of bilingual education at Texas A&M University in Kingsville, Texas. He began working with the government literacy program in Ghana about 10 years ago. Esther Goody introduced him to Paul Schaefer in 2012, and over the next 2 years, they talked about ways to work together on the school project. In 2014, Mr. Sherris visited the Sofala area twice and helped encourage the new movement to teach the Sofala language in school. The Mandari Sofala chief, Bodua Mango Kafinti II, also supports this effort. He sees the writing of Sofala as a way to preserve the language. He says the language helps protect the culture. He says people must become proud of their language to guarantee it continues.
Ari Sherris and Mr. Schaefer, together, visited a class in northern Ghana. They noticed that some children struggled with English, while others did not. The educators learned that the more successful children attended the night classes with their parents.
In teaching and observing in some of the classes, we realized that even at sixth grade, the majority were not able to read. But in the third grade, we spent a few days teaching a few alphabet letters and linking them to keywords in their local language. And just within a class period, you could see kids were grasping the whole point of an alphabet that hadn't ever before. You could see what could be done with it if it was done all the time. And there's a sense in which you don't want to claim too much, but there's another sense in which language is very powerful, and the language that you know is something that you can really build on.
Since the Sofala language has only recently been written, there are few materials for teachers and students to read.
One thing that's absolutely critical is the whole thing of publishing materials. And even though we live in an era where a lot is done on the internet, I don't think it's practical to have literacy without books. And so our biggest need is to be able to print more books.
Paul Schaefer is happy that donors to the Sofala project recently purchased a copy machine called a duplicator. Having the duplicator in the Sofala area makes it possible to do almost all the printing work locally. It will help the Sofala community to print books in their own language.
Our vision is that if we can turn it into a small local press, we'll be able to meet their needs for materials and possibly reach out to the other minority languages in the area.
The new duplicator meant that GILLBT could publish a dictionary for beginning readers. The first bilingual dictionary of Sofala and English was published in 2014. As their chief hopes, young children in the Sofala community can now learn to read and take pride in their language. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Jim Tedder.